Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome an old friend of mine, a very talented man of many, many arts, Mr. Mitch Mestel, bass player, comic. Welcome, Mitch. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks so much, Rick. I'm so glad to be here on the show with you.
Mitch, how long have you been playing bass, buddy?
Oh, good Lord. 44 years or so.
So you're fairly accustomed to it then, I guess.
I'm getting there. It's still kind of heavy. My shoulder still hurts if I use the wrong bass for too long. at least my calluses don't turn into like looking like shredded wheat.
Now, Mitch, I know that you played in a whole variety of bands, rock bands, blues bands, folk bands. And punk, no kidding. So tell me, how did you start? What was it that bit, you know, how were you bitten by the music bug?
Well, it goes back probably even before music. My dad was a stagehand in New York when I was a little kid.
Oh, no kidding.
On Broadway.
Oh, my.
So a couple of times he took me to work with him. So I'm backstage and, you know, seeing how My Fair Lady and The Sound of Music run.
Oh, my.
In fact, a very funny little Sound of Music story.
Sure.
I'm about 6 years old. My dad introduces me to one of the stagehands that he trusted and said, here, if Jimmy says to come with him, listen to him. Ignore everyone else back here. Which, having spent more time in theaters as an adult, I've met the Jimmys and I know about the other guys. So he was pretty dead on with that. So anyway, it's somewhere during, right towards the end of the first act, Jimmy comes over to me and says, hey, how'd you like to see some of the show? You can stand right over here by this open doorway, which is center stage, towards the back of the stage. And if you're familiar with The Sound of Music, there's a scene where the teacher comes in and the father is introducing the kids to the teacher.
Oh, my.
And towards the end of that scene, he starts yelling and pointing at the door. Now, my ADD self, I'm not paying attention to what's going on stage. I'm looking at the audience. I'm looking at the lights, the rigging, everything around me. And all of a sudden, this guy is yelling at me and pointing at me. And I see that, and I think I messed up. You know, did I move out of the shadow? Did something happen? Did I do something wrong? So I take off out of the theater, right past this little old lady that was hanging out the back of the theater. So I was tearing down the street, just terrified. And she comes chasing after me. It's like, young man, stop, please, trying to kill me. And I mean, she was like old enough to be my grandmother's mother. Anyway, she asks me if I'm Artie the stagehand's son, and I say yes. And she said, well, I'm Aunt Sophie. Come with me. Don't worry about it. Everything will be okay. And she asked what happened, so I told him I was, you know, Jimmy brought me over here, and then the man on stage started yelling at me, oh, that's just Theodore. Don't worry about him. I'll take care of him in a few minutes. So we walk back into the theater, and my new Aunt Sophie gets up into Theodore Bikel's face, because that's who was the male lead, about how he scared me. And he apologized to Sophie Tucker, my new aunt.
Oh, my.
And next thing I know, he's singing folk songs to me.
Oh, wow. That's awesome, man.
So, I've been around show business a lot, and actually the back end of it fascinated me as much as being out on stage. When I was a year or two older, my dad took me to one of the Leonard Bernstein's young people's concerts.
Oh, wow.
And they thought that it was amazing that I could pick out the second violins or violas, and it's like, I don't know, it's easy to, I can pick an instrument out of the orchestra while I'm watching them. And it just, you know, I don't know. Some people can, some people can't, I guess. But anyway, I played a couple instruments in school until I got to be about 12 or so, and then it was like, nah, I didn't want to do any of it. And then it was like 13. Now, 13 was 1969, so think about what was going on then.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
I wanted to play guitar, so my folks get me this guitar that was like almost as big as I am, because, you know, I'm not a big person. And this thing was enormous. The body was bigger than my acoustic bass guitar is now. It was like, it might as well have been a guitar on, you know, those huge bass guitar things.
Sure, sure.
Mariachi bands play. Yeah, and any time I tried playing it, it hurt.
Aww.
So So I gave up on that, and a while later I figured, well, I see this guy with, you know, like the guy in the Beatles, he's only got four strings on his, so maybe I'll just cut two off. And I tried that, and then the next year my folks, it's like I went to a school dance, and the guitar player's amp blows up, and now it's keyboards, bass, and drums while they go run to get another guitar amp. And I heard the electric bass really by itself kind of for the first time, and I was like, that is as cool as can be. That is what I want to do. And then when I was, like I said, when I was 14, almost 15, got my first bass. And before I turned 16, some fool paid me to go play it in public.
Wow.
And that was the beginning of the end.
Well, that's neat. That's neat. I know you from, you know, the blues and the folk scene, I think. And, of course, some comedy stuff, too. You have a wonderful range as an artist. Now, I know you've pointed to some blues tunes for us that you've been working with Iko Iko lately.
Yeah, lately, like almost 9 years.
Well, that's sort of lately.
well, for a band that's like almost 31 years old, yeah, I guess, you know, nine's really not that much.
For those of you who don't know the band Iko Iko, it is an extraordinary, would you say, blues, funk, and voodoo kind of band?
Well, we've called it Swampadelic.
Swampadelic.
Gulf Coast Roots Rock, and I dare anyone to say that three times fast. You can go to www.iko-iko.com. where we've got some video up over there, we've got stories about the band. You can hear how the nucleus of Iko Iko helped Johnny Depp onto his film career.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so there was a, well, I'll tell you the story, if you don't mind.
No, please.
There was a radio station down here in the 80s called K102.
Okay.
And they did a battle of the bands at a place called the Sportatorium, another place that used to be here that all the big concerts used to go to.
Oh, yes. Remember it well.
Yes, the place without air conditioning or seats. But anyway, I digress. Anyway, there's a bunch of bands that were playing there. Victim was playing there. I think Freewheel was playing there. I'm trying to remember some of the other bands. Names escape me. The Kids. And they had like people from Cellar Door and people from the Agora and stuff like that there for the Kids because they were a real big deal. They had this rhythm guitar player, background singer, this Johnny Kid, Johnny Depp. Actually, George Mazzola was the lead guitar player, and he was, like, the guy.
Wow.
Anyway, Iko gets up and plays, and they end up winning. Or actually, it's the Fat Chance Blues Band.
Right, right.
They ended up winning. And less than, like, a month after that, Johnny decides he's going to go out to L.A. and try and see if he can, you know, sell the band out there. And he's having problems selling the band, and then he gets, you know, these calls for work, you know, to go do some little acting gigs, and they became big acting gigs, and well, there goes his music career down the drain.
Why don't you talk about the band? Who's in the band now?
Okay, right now we have well, of course, Graham Woodrout, who started the band with John Wenzel, who had started the Fat Chance Blues Band, which was Graham's first band. Iko is Graham's second band. And he hadn't figured out how to get into another one, so he's kept it. But anyway, we've got those two. I came along, and I guess current band chronology, I was the next one in about 9 years ago. And then we got this fellow, Ron Taylor, as our keyboard player. Ron played with the Bellamy Brothers for about 15 years. And
wow.
He's also a very noted engineer. He's one of two people that worked on both Frank Sinatra's Duets album and Two Live Crew's Nasty As You Want to Be.
Wow.
And if you saw the Bellamy Brothers back in like the I think late 70s, early 80s through like early 90s, good possibility you saw Ron playing keyboards.
No kidding.
Yeah. He also has other engineering talents, but I'll put it this way: if you listen to pop radio, you hear his hand without knowing it. And that's about all I can say about him.
Wow.
Then we have our drummer, Jimmy Daniel, another guy you should Google. He's the drummer on It's Raining Men, the Weather Girls tune.
Oh yeah.
He started out in Indiana playing with John Mellencamp, came to New York, played with John for a little bit, decided to go to school, and then got back into doing session work. He's toured with everybody from Dr. John to Diana Ross to Aretha Franklin. The Prime Minister of Haiti wants to jam. He calls him, and there's a jet sent over to Opa-locka Airport to pick him up.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is kind of, you know, it's a drag sometimes. It's like, dude, I need to have a sub for Saturday. I got to go down to Port-au-Prince. You know, you can't say no to the, you know, like the guy that's the leader of Haiti.
That's for sure. Well, listen, we've talked about some really good music. What do you say we listen to one? Do you want to hear that that first cut?
Let me see. Would it Zydeco Town or?
Yeah, I think it's the Zydeco Town.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
a fine tune. Let me.
Set it up.
Here's the story about Zydeco Town. There used to be a Zydeco Festival here in Fort Lauderdale. A lot of fun, great food, people dancing, cool music. Of course, you know, it didn't last. And so Graham was kind of bummed about it, so he wrote this tune, This Ain't No Zydeco Town, but it's Everybody Knows This Ain't No Zydeco Town.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you.
That nice tune, man. Nice tune.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, like I said, I'm playing with my favorite songwriter.
You can't beat that.
It's
so
rough, let me tell you.
The Iko Iko Band and its predecessor, Fat Chance, they've been a mainstay in Miami for some time now. My goodness.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, what was nice was that right at the inception of the band, Tobacco Road came into being with the owners that were there for quite a long time. It was like they came in, they packed the place a couple of times, and the owner said, you want to come back and just do whatever you want to do? And they did for like 25 years.
Yeah, in fact, you know, you mentioned Tobacco Road. What a shame to see that wonderful place closing down.
Yeah, the place has been a little frustrating as of late, because in the 80s and like early 90s, anytime you went there, like, you'd see great, great players there. Albert Collins, Buddy Guy, John Hammond Jr., David Bromberg, Guitar Shorty. Names just keep coming. Diamond Teeth Mary McLean, who they named the upstairs for. She was a vaudeville entertainer that was like a, you know, I won't say a protege of Robert Johnson, but she was around the same time he was.
Wow.
It had a history like that. Now, they were able to get these acts when they were affordable. And then another club came into being over on Miami Beach that was a really cool place. They got an outlet up in New York. I'm not going to mention names.
Right.
But they offered the acts three times what they were getting at the Road if they didn't play the Road anymore.
Well, that's too bad.
And if you haven't been down to that neck of the woods recently, I suggest you don't drive when you go there and you let someone who's used to it drive you, because you cannot believe what that area has become. It's all high-rises now.
What a shame.
And
you know,
as you know, there were no high-rises within about a block and a half of that place, two blocks of that place, for a very long time.
Incredible. You know,
yeah, so it's, you know the thing about Miami, if we have something cool, it's got to be torn down.
You know, I went there for years and years and years they supported so many great political causes, environmental causes, medical marijuana, and so many other things.
I've played many of them.
Yeah, I've staged my plays there as well. It's a place I remember so fondly, and with such a great history of Miami, you know, it's a shame to see it meet its demise. But, well, luckily, Iko Iko's in no danger there. Huh? Iko Iko will be continuing for a long time.
We're going to keep going as long as we can keep going, because, quite frankly, it's really too late to, like, do anything else.
Well, you know, when I was listening to these cuts earlier, I heard one that starts off with a really hot bass lick. Do you remember which one that is?
Is it Day the Old Man Died?
I think that's it. That's it.
That's actually one of the ones that I was going to suggest that you play.
Let's listen to Day the Old Man Died, or Old Man. Here we go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. That was awesome. You know, I got to ask you about a couple of the instrumentalists on there. The guitar player is phenomenal. Who was that on guitar?
That's Mr. Good Rockin' Johnny Wenziel.
Wow.
That's the guy that started the Fat Chance Blues Band.
No kidding. My goodness, that's some tearing stuff. And who was it on bass there, Mitch?
Oh, I don't know. Some clown that likes to wear his purple top hat. Funny story about this tune. When Graham first wrote it, he was doing some stuff with Albert Castillo. And it was supposed to be called The Day Chuck Berry Died. And Albert, you know, told Graham, look, dude, Chuck may find out about it. He may not be really too thrilled. You're talking about the day he dies. and Graham thought better of it and thought, you know, as weird as this world is, probably right.
Yeah.
You don't want to piss off Chuck Berry.
That's for sure. I used to be production manager of a concert company called Pace Concerts.
I worked for you on a number of occasions down in Miami Beach.
I do remember that. And in fact, we were doing a festival on Miami Beach where we had four big shows simultaneously. I was spread all over hell and back. And one of the feature bands was going to be the Allman Brothers. Greg Allman and his band. And we were looking for an opening act, and everybody was wondering this and wondering that. And I said, there's only one band. It's got to be Iko, Fat Chance at the time. And so they got that opening act gig for the open for the Greg Allman and his band. And they were phenomenal. They were phenomenal then, and they're phenomenal now, man. This is one hell of a blues band.
When I was a kid, listen to Clapton, and then who's Clapton talking about? You know, who's Robert Johnson? Who's
right.
Who's Buddy Guy?
Yeah.
I hate to say that my advancing age is taking names away from me.
sure.
But I started just investigating the people that they were referencing.
Exactly.
When I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan, actually early on, I had a chance to work with him a couple times.
No kidding.
And Stevie turned me on to the Fabulous Thunderbirds.
Uh-huh.
If you ain't heard my brother's band, you got to hear my brother. And Eric Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the other tie-in, which is kind of funny, when I first got my bass guitar, the cool kids on my block, now I was 14, the cool kids were like 16, 17, they were playing blues.
Uh-huh.
And of course, I learned how to tune the thing. And even that, I wasn't really good at.
Mm-hmm.
And so they hand me these two albums and say, here, don't mess these things up, and when you can play along with them, you can play with us. So I put them on it. It was Johnny Winter and Johnny Winter and live at Pirates World.
Whoa.
I was upstate New York then.
Wow.
I didn't know that Pirates World was going to be a mile from my house, where I currently live.
No kidding.
Tommy Shan, the guy who played bass with Stevie Ray Vaughan, was playing bass on those records.
No kidding.
And so I went to school on those records, and that's how I first got going. Anyway, when I was working for a lady named Mary Fleming doing sound.
Oh, I remember Mary Fleming.
You remember Mother Mary.
Yes, wild days, boy, wild days.
No comment. That's all I'm going to say.
You remember Payday. Everybody put their skis on.
Oh, yeah, you betcha. Enough of that. Those of us who survived, there's still enough of us. I'm not saying anything else. we did the record bar conventions. Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble had just broke. I mean, their album had just hit the top 40.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I broke the news to Tommy Shannon. They had just gotten in from Europe, got on the bus in Newark, drove down to Durham, woke up. Tommy walks into the hall, and they're getting ready to load in. And I've got a fresh copy of Billboard, conveniently open to the top 40 albums, and point to Texas Flood with a 36 and a bullet. Which, for those of you who don't know what that means, it means it's climbing up the charts quickly. And this is the band's first record.
Jeez.
So they didn't know about it. So it was sort of cool to be able to break the news to them. Anyway, after sound check, I went up to Tommy and said, Tommy, I want to thank you. You're the guy that got me started playing bass. He looked at me and said, I met you this morning. How could I do that? So I told him how, you know, the deal.
How did it all work,
Well, actually, I said, you played with Johnny Winter. He goes, yeah. I said, you played in Johnny Winter and? He goes, yeah. I said, you had a Live at Pirates World album and a three-sided double album. Because it was two albums, one side was blank. They said they had too much for one record and not enough for two. They're just going to give you everything we got. And at that point, he's like, you really know my stuff. And so, from back then. And then told him how that all worked. And what surprised me is I was the first person to ever tell him that.
Wow.
And then he said, by the way, that bass over there, that's the bass I used to do this record. So if you want to pick it up and play it, please be my guest. I'd love it if you did it.
Wow.
So I got a chance to play the bass that recorded the tracks that I played along with when I first got mine.
That's
very cool. So
it was
a nice little circle, you know?
What's another cut we can tune into here? Something that maybe we can hear a little bit of bass on?
Actually, Afraid to Fall Asleep.
Okay, Afraid to Fall Asleep. Go
ahead.
Yeah,
it's
sort of
funny. There's two tunes there that I like, Too High to Drive also, but that's just like a straight-ahead rock tune. Afraid to Fall Asleep, that's another one of Graham's kind of creepy tunes, but I love Graham's creepy tunes.
Sure. Okay, Afraid to Fall Asleep.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm not sure how well it came through on this recording, but I'm probably most proud of my singing, believe it or not.
No kidding. Okay, great.
Yeah, I'm one of these reluctant vocalists that, as I'm pushing 60, I'm finally getting confident.
Don't want to rush into anything, you know?
Well, you know, before you dive in, you got to take a really, really good look at the world.
Hey, look, if Bob Dylan sings, say no more.
Yeah, but he sings his own songs. I sing other people's tunes. You have to do it at least as good as they do or better. I'm barely as good as he is.
Okay,
and,
well, we'll leave it
and,
there.
You know, and unfortunately, I can't come close to him as a writer.
Well, that's another story. Okay, here we go. Afraid to Fall Asleep. Well, let me ask you this, Mitch, before we do the last tune. Are there any gigs coming up for Ico Ico or the illustrious
Actually,
Mr. Mestel?
We have a real exciting one. As for full disclaimer, because I know that this show is being played Sunday evening.
Correct.
And it's probably be somewhere near 7 o'clock now. I will be on stage at the Barnacle as we speak right now, as this is being played over the internet. We're having a 1967-style Lovin'.
Oh, my.
We're not talking any of that hippie stuff. We're talking Flower Children.
Wow.
We don't want any of that Woodstock stuff. No. We're wavy. We're talking Summer of Love.
Sounds good.
Still fun and the pros hadn't gotten involved.
Sure. The posers, the wannabes, the guys with long hair that only have long hair. They don't have the attitude. They don't understand the thing.
Exactly.
I remember it well.
Back before long hair was really, you know, required.
Yep. Well,
all you needed was the right attitude.
Yep. Well, you and I are both remember that old phrase, it's not the hair that makes the head.
Exactly. And being as that New Times had voted the Barnacle the best place in Miami to be high, we figured, well, okay, if this isn't a natural, I don't know what is. And we're having a continuation of our CD release party. We've got a disc out now called Bullets in a Bonfire, Volume 1.
Cool.
Which has got tunes from the band going from the first album. The first two recordings the band did are on vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
And haven't been re-released.
No kidding.
So we've got tunes going back from, I think 82 or 83.
Wow.
And clear up to some stuff that Graham had recorded with Albert Castilla about 6 years ago. But that's available on iTunes and on CD Baby. As I said, we're doing the Barnacle thing. We had just won the South Florida Blues Society's IBC competition, which is International Blues Challenge.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks. In January, we represent the South Florida Blues Society up in Memphis, so that should be a lot of fun. And because I've been up there once before, a rather infamous time when Piano Bob and the Snowman had won a Handy Award, and I was playing with Big Bob and the Blue Tornadoes, and Bob got into a fight with the Snowman.
Oh boy!
Piano Bob, yeah, in the back of the New Daisy Theater. Yeah, it's just one of those kind of blues stories, you know.
Yeah.
But to make another long story short, as the two of them were headed out the back door of the theater, I knew they were going to get into a fight. I turned to Piano Bob, who I had not really met before then, and said, "Don't you think we should maybe try and get in between those two guys and stop it?" And he looked at me and said, "You see the size of those two galoots? You think I want to get in between those two? I suggest you don't either." As for most of you who have no clue about me, I'm only 5'7". I'm not a big guy, and I ain't that wide. So it's like, if I can't do it with words, that's the only tool I've got to stop something like that. Anyway, Bob and I are friends to this day. Bob Wilder, the Piano Bob. Not so much big. And Kenny has since moved on to Thailand.
Wow.
And I'm not making that part up.
Sure. Well, my strangest blues story is we were producing a 5-stage show called Miami Music and Heritage Fair. This was Pace. And so I'm a production manager on all these stages, making sure everything works according to plan. And within reason, it was. But my final climactic band on one of the stages was John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. And since this thing had gone relatively well, this was the final afternoon of the final day of the final show on my final stage playing, I let loose and was dancing a little bit and just, you know, kind of letting all that energy go. And I get a call on my walkie-talkie that I better come to the Mayall stage real quick because there's a problem. John Mayall had a bottle of whiskey in one hand and a 45 in the other on the stage.
Oh, my.
On the stage, waving them both around, mind you.
Oh, my.
And my stage manager had beat a hasty retreat, not wanting to be
a target.
A target, yeah. So I go running over to the stage, and they said to me, "So, Rick, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to get him to put that gun down or get shot in the process." So I go over to the wings and I said, John, put the gun down. And he looked at me like, "Who the hell?" And then he remembered who I was. And I said, "John, this is Miami. The cops shoot first." And of course, this is during the Miami Vice days. And he looked at me and went, "Oh shit." And he just went over to his guitar case and put them both down. I went, "Yes. We may all live to tell the tale."
Well, actually, I've got a fairly funny story when I was working for you.
Sure.
Down at South Point Park. Hey, you couldn't be in town, and Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels were playing.
Oh, my.
And you wouldn't think that, like, a band from back then plays really loud.
Right.
It's like all they've got on stage are Marshalls.
Oh, jeez.
And it's like the little ones are the 100 watters. They actually have 200 watt Marshalls up there, too.
Oh, my God.
So we have 400 watts of monitors, if you recall. So I'm giving it everything I can give it. I'm any place I can find more gain to make it louder, I've got it. It's right on the hairy edge of feeding back.
Sure.
And they can't hear the monitors.
Oh, boy.
So Jim McCarty, the guitar player, comes up to me during their break, just screaming and cursing and madder than a hornet. You know, "Why can't I hear? Why can't I go?" And it's like, "You know, I hate to tell you this, but we got 400 watts and I see like 900 behind you. And you're winning this war. I can't fight it. If you turn down, the monitors are there." It's like, "Oh, I play fucking rock and roll." Sorry. "You know, you can't tell me what to do. You can't tell me to turn down." It's like, "Well, that's all I got." And he let loose again. And then said, "Here, let me do that." And anytime he touched anything in the monitor section of the board, you hear the stage howl.
Right.
And then finally, he just kind of threw up. He like left it howling, threw up his hand, started cursing, and walked away. Sorry, Mr. McCarty.
Well, that's the part of rock and roll I do not miss at all.
I have to say that at the time, it totally unnerved me. Now, it's just a funny story.
Right.
But it did teach me one thing. be nice to the guy behind the board. Sometimes the problems he's having is not something he can fix, and it's not really his fault.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. That's for sure.
But anyway, no, it's all good, and it's actually, I look back on those days, and I just chuckle.
Well, Mitch, thank you so much for joining me for this time, my friend. What tune can we go out on, my friend?
Okay, I would still like to try Flayton's Fall Asleep. I think it's a lovely tune, and it should be the one that was right after the one that you just played.
Well, let's give it a try here.
Cross our fingers.
Yep.
And I'll say thank you again.
Ico-Iko.com.
That's Ico-Iko.com. Come see us on CD Baby. Come see us on iTunes. Boy, I'm starting to feel like a NASCAR driver.
Hey,
now.
Buy the records or buy the CDs for God's sakes, right? Buy the MP3s.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we need to print more. And also on the website, believe it or not, you can order T-shirts. We have the Protected by Voodoo T-shirts.
Oh, cool!
That have the Ico-Iko label. We've got the Urban Swamp T-shirts.
Cool.
We've got the Ico-Iko T-shirts that on the back say "That Band from Tobacco Road," and also this S**T is awesome.
Okay, man. Thanks again, buddy. We'll go out on this tune.
Okay. Great to speak to you, Rick. Take care.
Likewise. Bye bye. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
say my prayer. And I got things that I just don't care. I wake up in the strangest place, but the world brings me to my face.
That was Afraid to Fall Asleep. And now this final word for Mitch Mistel.
You've been listening to PNN, the activist's voice.
Thanks again, Mitch. You take care.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
See you all at the barnacle.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.